हरिः ॐ
सहनावगतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. So page 51. Durvasa Muni continued, all the blessed women in the heavenly planets will continuously chant about your spotless character at every moment. And the people of this world will also chant your glories continuously. Shri Sukadev Goswami continued, thus, being satisfied in all respects, the great mystic yogi Durvasa took permission and left, continuously glorifying the king. Through the skyways he went to Brahmaloka, which is devoid of agnostics and dry philosophical speculators. Srila Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur comments, Durvasa went to Brahmaloka to speak to his Brahman realized friends about his deliverance, the great influence of bhakti and the devotees, and about the Lord who is controlled by the devotees. Bahaitukam means the place which is devoid of dry reason. Shri Sukadev Goswami continued. Yes.
Brahmaloka is where Brahmavadis sleep.
Yes.
Devoid of dry reasoning?
No, but there would be, how you say, Brahman realized means that they're on that level of understanding that they're the soul, not the body. But they all believe in the Supreme.
It's not dry?
No, that's what it's saying here. It's devoid of dry reasoning.
And what would be dry reasoning?
How you say, if they don't know about the Supreme. See, that means all devotees are on the platform of Brahman realization. Right? It means that's the platform where you start from. Right? So here it is that you have those that are in between. That they're on the transcendental platform, but maybe haven't developed their love for Krishna like that. So they're very, very advanced. In other words, the most advanced that you could be within the universe, right? Without being specifically a devotee. Means you could be a devotee also. Like Narad Muni is there, the four Kumaras are there. So in other words, Mayavadis and all this kind of things, that's not there. So they all understand Vedanta and things like that.
But remember we did in Brihad Bhagavatamrita when one Vedas were arguing with the others and then the Vaishnava literatures, they left because they didn't like what they were saying. Was it there?
Could have been. But it's not dry reasoning. It's based on, you know, on the scriptures they're going through. In other words, there's realization within it, just not that much realization. Yeah. So in other words, the speculation that you get here is not there. They have better quality of speculation.
Can we say that they have that list of Brahman but not about the Supreme?
Yes. Means they'll be on the platform of Vijnanamoy. They won't be on the means they may even be on the platform of Anandamoy, but on the lower levels. They won't be on the platform of Anandamoy that the Vaishnavas taste. There may be individuals who are, but that's not the qualification to be there. The qualification to be there is you're the most pious in the universe. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, Durvasa Muni had left the place of Maharaj Ambarisha, and as long as he had not returned for one complete year, the king had fasted, maintaining himself simply by drinking water. After 1 year, when Durvasa Muni had returned, King Ambarish sumptuously fed him all varieties of pure food, and then he himself also ate. When the king saw that the Brahmana Durvasa had been released from the great danger of being burned, he could understand that by the grace of the Lord, he himself was also powerful. But he did not take any credit, for everything had been done by the Lord. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 24. Marjambarish was the emperor of the entire world and had many duties to perform. And in the course of these duties, there were many disturbances created by persons like Durvasa Muni. But the king tolerated everything, patiently depending fully on the mercy of the Lord. The Lord, however, is situated in everyone's heart. Sarvasya chaham hrini sani vishtaha. Bhagavad Gita 15:15. And he manages things as he desires. Thus, although Maharaj Ambarish was faced with many disturbances, the Lord, being merciful to him, managed things so nicely that in the end, Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish became great friends and parted cordially on the basis of Bhakti Yoga. After all, Durvasa Muni was convinced of the power of Bhakti Yoga, although he himself was a great mystic yogi. Therefore, as stated by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 6:47, of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. Thus it is a fact that a devotee is the topmost yogi, as proved by in the dealings of Maharaj Ambarish with Durvasa Muni. Yes.
So there's really a nice point here that true reconciliation can really happen from Bhakti Yoga.
Yes.
We see that sometimes, you know, we might go through mediation and all these kind of modern things, even in conflict, but actually reconciliation only happens.
Yes. See, is that if you have the ability to interact with people, that personal understanding, and that then what's the need of the mediation? See, the concept is the mediation is a higher principle. So if you're using the mediation, then that shows that symptomatic of a higher, more developed society. But the point is if people can't discuss, right, then that means that there's a lower level of relationship in that. Not that it's a better. But at the same time, is that's what judges are there for. They do that kind of reconciliation. But that would be on the platform of law and things like that. But when you're dealing on the platform of personal, then, you know, if need be, if someone, you know, can help. But generally it's someone from the family and that. It's not, you don't have to be trained in everything. You if you know relationships, you know how to deal. Does that make sense? So you understand relationships, you use your intelligence, you figure out what's the common points, what are the differences are, who's saying what. You know what I'm saying? So that's just a matter of being practical in one's life. So that's learned by practically, the training is practical. Like that. If training is simply an academic exercise, then where is the practical? You know, they sometimes have these little forms that they get together. And, you know, how you say you sit in a circle and then somebody tries to spark some kind of conversation based on nothing, you know, and then, you know, you go try to go and then everybody feels, okay, yes, we did that this term. And so, you know, that part's been done. So, you know, now they're all know how to interact and, you know what I'm saying? So a theoretical application that they'll use occasionally, then somehow or another, now they're trained for life's, you know. Yeah, so slightly, yeah. But here also we see is that means you have the yoga process or linking with the Supreme. Now, for those who are linking with Brahman and Paramatma, then basically they're taking the external forms. They're not actually taking the primary form, which is the Lord himself and that devotion to the Lord. So that's why it's not understood, because the devotee being connected with the primary aspect, the Lord himself, the secondary may be more or less manifest. It's not that important like that. If it's the duty and that's what's recommended, of course, then it's done very nicely. But that's not where the emphasis is. The emphasis is on the primary. Now these yogis and that, they'll be, and other, you know, the mystics and these great sages and that, their focus is on the external. how much shastra they know, how austere they are, how controlled are their senses. Does that make sense? It's all about that. So not seeing that to that degree in devotees, then it's always considered, oh, devotees aren't that, you know, developed. Because their whole development is within the secondary, not the primary. Does that make sense? So it's like that, anything in the material world. You have more money, you're more developed. You know, anything secondary, yes.
But why devotees are less developed than secondary? We all come from their background, not all, but some come from background. Those people are developed and devotees should also be developed.
Means if materially you are, in other words, when you become a devotee, then you actually understand how developed you are.
Because the tendency when you do become a devotee, you forget all your development, material kind of.
But the point is how developed was it? Means one sits around with friends and talks. So it's very developed. Like, you know, it's just, it's just like, let us say we have a group of guys, right? And it is the sports season, right? And so the finals are on, right? Now, how much about this sport do they know? Right? Means in their mind, how much? They know everything. They can call the plays that even the coaches, the best guys, you know, the newscasters, no one can understand. They know everything. But now, technically, if you gave them a ball, what would they be able to do with it? Right? That's the whole point. So when we take up Krishna consciousness, then the reality of what you actually know is there. That's one aspect. I'm just bringing in this first so that it adjusts the approach, because the approach first is with the what's the mood. Right? So if we start off with the mood that maybe I don't know as much as I thought I knew, then we could approach it. Second is because when you're trying out something new that you're not used to, you know, new lifestyle, new everything like that, you're going to be focused on that and not so much on these other aspects. Right? But if we started with that, then we'd maintain the false ego that I know so much. So in other words, you put those two together. We don't know the devotional lifestyle, and whatever, however great we thought we were before, we're not necessarily that great. You know, we may be great in a particular area, but outside that area, they can be completely useless. Right? And so since Krishna consciousness has that wide range, and you're interacting with a very large range of people, right? It means the amount of, you know, we're sitting here interacting with, let's say, devotees from 50 different countries, right? So, and within those, it's not necessarily their, you know, they may be unique within that environment, right? You know, like that. So how many people are actually in such an environment? You know, let's say somebody's in New York or London or someplace that's quite cosmopolitan. But the thing is how many people do they actually interact with? Right? Very few. And those people are most likely
Chinese.
Huh? Sorry?
Most likely Chinese.
Yes, that's another thing. And so then they're going to be of similar mentality. Even though they're of different backgrounds, they're similar mentality. But here you can't say they're from different backgrounds, not necessarily same mentality. So you're working in a much broader range. So to be able to function in that, not that many people will be that good. You know, you're really good in your place with your friends, but come outside of that, you may not be so great. Right? So that means the material skills are not necessarily viable or as great as we thought. And so then a matter of through Krishna consciousness, then we develop that character, and by Krishna's grace, the skills in which we can function in those bigger environments. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just a standard thing. Because you take, you have somebody in the West, okay, they're big manager of the big temple. How many people in that big temple that actually live there? Right? Five, okay. And so, you know, yeah, big temple, because if we weren't talking those, we'd only be counting deities. That's right. So, like that. And then they get together with, you know, another 20 such people who have, you know, less or more. And they all laugh and joke about, you know, where Bhakta Jose is these days, you know. Oh, he's in your temple now and all that. And yeah, yeah, how long has he been there? Yeah, 2 months and all that. What does he do? Okay, yeah, does he ever do this? Yeah, yeah, okay, isn't that, yeah, like that kind of stuff. So amongst themselves, they're doing great. But now you take all of them together, you put it all together, okay, 10 temples, maybe they have 50 devotees, 100 devotees. Right? Now if they come here, there's 5,000. Now they're the big guy over there, but over here, one department head is bigger than them. All of them together. Does that make sense? So that means is the skills won't be necessarily as... Does that make sense? So like that, we have... You know, or, you know, we run our little... We grow some cabbages out back, but then to run a farm, that's a whole different thing. So, you have both the skill and the attitude. Right? So when the attitude is right in Krishna consciousness, then we come up to, by Krishna's grace, then one can do anything. That's the whole point of that mukham karoti vachalam. Pangolam Kayate Girim. That the devotee, even though he doesn't have that, he can do anything. You know, therefore you have these devotees. Prabhupada's here is that they've been a devotee for 3 months. They go out and open temples or open yatras. Like that. That's by because they have that faith, then they're able to do things. So that's the point here is that Ambarish Maharaj, because of his faith in the Lord, therefore he's able to conquer one of the greatest yogis in the universe. Okay. But he understands that it's the Lord. It's not himself. Right? Just the Lord is affording that. So devotee, as they understand that I am good at something, but that's by the grace of the Lord, so actually it's not us. They can maintain the mood and then they can move forward. But as soon as we think, yes, I'm doing this, then it's okay, now you do it. And then you will run into so many things. Does that make sense? So, is that, yeah. So, the point is within these different varieties of religion that the Vedas are discussing, you know, religion of study or of austerity, you know, these different things, or ritual, or yoga, So these are focused so much on the secondary because that's what makes them work. Like you can't do yoga unless you can sit there basically forever and stop your breathing. You know, so it does require an external skill. Or you're doing the yajna, you have to know all the mantras, all the rituals, all the technique. Does that make sense? You know, the austerities, you have to be able to tolerate. You know, you can sit there in the middle of summer with four fires around you at noonday under the sun. Right? So you're able to, those are all those external things. So because they focus on, it's easy to focus on something external because you know what benefit you're getting back from it. Right? Not that it's easy, but I'm saying it's easier. But then devotional is that it's just about pleasing the Lord. So it's based on a relationship. It's not based on this. Does that make sense? So those who are into the secondary, they'll think, oh, this is not very developed. You know? And we can make the same mistake. Devotees develop in a certain area, you know, like this modern management. And then others who don't know the lingo in that, oh, they're out of it, how can they manage? But much of the time they can manage, you know, just to be conservative and be kind 10 times better than any one of those people that know the lingo. You know what I'm saying? Like we said, they're managing a department with 80 to 100 people. They've been doing it for the last 20 years and no one's ever heard of them. Like that. So that's the whole thing. So therefore, those with material skills, and especially those within the Vedic system, because it's so developed, well, anything, the modern Vedic, they'll consider so much more. The academics will consider they're superior to everyone. Anyone with any kind of ability, doctors, lawyers, you know, things like that, they'll all consider that they're better. And so that's then the aspect within devotional service in the mode of ignorance is because of that you think you're a more advanced devotee. Like that. So then that becomes a problem. So materially, everything's very good, but then how developed it is personally, individually, that's another thing. But since we look at externals, then we think that's the symptom of advancement. Right? But it's that one's taking one's ability and using it for Krishna. So if one is very expert on the material platform and one applies that expertise and does nice things for Krishna, that is devotional service. But it's the effort of devotion that makes it devotional service, not their expertise. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. Verses 25 to 28. Maharajan Barish retires from family life. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued. In this way, because of devotional service, Maharajan Barish, who was endowed with varieties of transcendental qualities, was completely aware of Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus he executed devotional service perfectly because of his devotion. He thought even the topmost planet of this material world no better than the hellish planets. Srila Prabhupada comments, an exalted and pure devotee like Maharajan Barish is in full awareness of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The absolute truth is realized in three features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti, Shabdyate. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:11. A devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, knows everything, Vasudeva Sarvam iti. Bhagavad Gita 7:19. Because Vasudev, Krishna, includes both Paramatma and Brahman. One does not have to realize Paramatma by the yoga system. For the devotee always thinking of Vasudeva is the topmost yogi. Yoginam api sarvesham. Bhagavad Gita 7:47. And as far as jnana is concerned, if one is a perfect devotee of Vasudev, he is the greatest Mahatma. Vasudevam sarvam. Vasudeva sarvam. Sarvam iti samahatma sudurvalabha. Thus, Maharajan Barish, being a devotee of the Personality of Godhead, was in full awareness of Paramatma, Brahman, Maya, the material world, the spiritual world, and how things are going on everywhere. Because the devotee knows Vasudev, he knows everything within the creation of Vasudev. Vasudeva sarvam iti samahatma sudurvalabha. Such a devotee does not give much value to the highest standard of happiness within this material world. So they're seeing everything. It's not by scholarship. It's by realization. Because the point is, it doesn't matter what your scholarship is, as long as you're applying yourself fully to serve Krishna, right? Then Krishna can reveal himself and you'll know this topmost platform. So that's the point. It's not about what's your material scholarship that gets the mercy of the Lord. It's the devotion. That's why, again, we see is that the devotee may appear not to be as skilled as the materialist, because it doesn't require material skill to be advanced in devotional service. But at the same time, is what he knows about the Lord and the universe is much greater than anybody else. Because he can see Paramatma in everything. The yogi sees Paramatma in his heart, but the devotee sees Paramatma in everything. Yes?
Can we say that the devotees, those who are looking for the secondary because of their materialistic association, basically?
That's just a habit. That's all we've done since we've come to the material world. Means we haven't done something else. That on the material platform there is no primary. Means we take the secondary and divide it into primary and secondary. You know, therefore the book comes out that reveals what's the actual inside point. But unless you have the karma to understand it, you can read the book and it won't. It'll go, wow, nice, but you can't use it anyway. You know? Does that make sense? Like I can hand you. You know, the latest, you know, how you say, $50,000 camera. And you'll look at it and go, wow, nice. You know, it's shiny, it's very exact, but you won't know what to do with it. Yeah. So that's all we've ever done is secondary. That's why we're here. So that's why this introduction of primary is so unique and different. And, you know, we'll sit and we'll hear and we'll understand and we'll go, yes. But then when we go to apply, we'll again go back to the secondary. So it's only by hearing constantly and practice that manana and practicing it and applying it, then eventually we get to the point where we start to see the primary when we're applying in the secondary. Right? Because the point is you're manifesting the primary through the secondary, but the secondary's only value is this connection to primary. That's why we say if you have very nice secondary, but it's not connected to Krishna, it's useless. But we never say the primary is useless if the secondary is not there. It just means how do you manifest it? So, right? So that makes sense. Yeah, the principle of cooking exists in its best nature, whether we manifest the cooking or not. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's they're seeing the Lord. So they're not interested in anything what's the highest material value in the way of happiness, because they have Krishna. They're always absorbed in Krishna. He is happiness. So there's nothing in this world that will make them happy. Right? They do things within the world, but the connection to Krishna, that's what makes them happy. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Thereafter, because of his advanced position in devotional life, Maharaj Ambarish, who no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property among his sons, who were equally as qualified, and he himself took the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudeva. Srila Prabhupada comments. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami thus instructs that if one's only desire is to serve is service to the Lord, he is liberated in any condition of life. Maharaj Ambarish was undoubtedly liberated in any condition, but as an ideal king, he accepted the Vanaprastha order of retirement for family life. It is essential for one to renounce family responsibilities and fully concentrate on the lotus feet of Vasudeva. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarish divided the kingdom among his sons and retired from family life. Because family life, you're worried about all these things. Now, he can be transcendental in this position where he is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. But as an ideal king, then one should move on at some point. So now when his sons are qualified, right? They've been to the Gurukul, they've been trained, and they come back to the palace. Then they're trained by the ministers and the Rajgurus. So when they're at the point where now they can run the kingdom, then he retires and lets them run. Because the idea is that you've had your time, right? Your time is when you can actually take advantage and when you don't mind dealing with all these material things. Right? It means you have the energy and the enthusiasm to go into that. So using it for Krishna, you don't mind, right? Because that's what you're going to do. But there comes a point when you don't really want to be bothered with all the detail of the secondary aspects. That's when it's the next generation's time. But we see in the modern, as people do not give up because of the prestige and the power and all, but they're not going to apply themselves as much as they were when they were younger. So that means then the next generation can't apply themselves and engage their desires in that way in Krishna's service. So it's now you've had your time, now it's their time. Now it's time, since one isn't so interested in all the detail anyway, that's the time for Vanaprastha, because that's what it's all about, just focusing on the direct activities. Indirect is done, but the point is one has done the indirect in a big way all one's life. Now one can do it in a smaller way without even thinking about it. Right? If you can manage something very big, managing something small is easy. It doesn't take hardly any time. That's Vanaprastha. Is that all that expertise one has, one only has to apply it in a very small amount of indirect. And then one applies, because one's been doing devotional service, so there's some development there. Now one applies the whole focus on that. So, in other words, in brahmacharya life, then it's all focused on developing the direct activities and proper knowledge and understanding. Then, with grihastha life, with that, then you apply that into indirect. Right? You continue with the direct, but the focus is more on the indirect because it's by volume. Then, now having become more mature in the direct activities and mature in the indirect, now as Vanaprastha, one focuses again back on the direct, but now it'll be more mature than as a brahmacharya. That's the idea.
correct to say that there's a correlation.
A little more loud. You have some serious competition.
Mm-hmm. That there's a correlation from the stages of one ashram to the stages of one's actual ability to become mature, or is there no such kind of correlation that can happen?
Means in devotional service, it doesn't have to be connected with that, because age is not age and learning through experience. These are things that are one way of learning. The other is that full commitment to the Lord, that surrender. You know the Lord, you know everything. Therefore, you see Prahlad Maharaj at 5 years old, then he's able to give instructions and prayers to the Lord that are more pleasing than all these demigods who, you know, will be millions of years old. Right? That's the whole point, is that the devotional, isn't controlled by that. But if one's not so strong on that, then these things will help. So the idea is that these stages are there, that at least at this point, if you haven't already come to that level of consciousness, now at least you focus on it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea. Yes?
I'm just trying to understand that also mentioned yesterday, that although we maybe not on that level of consciousness, still we try to act.
Yes.
According to that, like, you know, Madhyama or Vanaprastha, although we still have some attachments.
Yes.
So how should be done? Because if we overdo it, then the fall down is going to be there.
Yes. So that's why then it's at, in other words, the, let's say you take Vanaprastha. Yes. So then, how do you say? There's a level of material interaction or indirect interaction that we're comfortable with. But in family life, you're always trying to improve that and increase that. So vanaprastha means you're not trying to improve and increase that anymore. But it doesn't mean that that level that you're comfortable at doesn't remain. Does that make sense? So let's say someone was very wealthy and had lots of facilities. But how did he get that way? Did he start that way? You know, rare, but generally he would have built it up. So that means they're just continuing in that way. So vanaprastha means you don't develop it anymore. But you may be comfortable in that environment, you just maintain it. So in other words, mode of passion is dropped, you go into mode of goodness, just maintenance. Now is some time of, and so the focus goes on to the direct activities of devotional service, because now you don't have to think about how to increase, because that takes a lot of time and effort. Now you can focus on increasing your hearing and chanting. And so then with time, that will start to have effect. Then as you find that there's not a need for such great facilities, then you start downsizing, but only at the speed that you're comfortable with. So that's why the grihastha life and the vanaprastha, those generally has the greatest variety within it. Brahmacharis, basically, they have the same amount of nothing, and their bucket of halava is basically about the same size, right? And sannyasis also, then it's basically at a certain level. But grihastha and vanaprastha, that gives the widest range. You have from Sudama Brahman, you know, before he went to Dwarka and after he went to Dwarka. So everything in between is grihastha ashram. Right? And then when you reverse it, it goes the other way. Like Dhritarashtra, he's vanaprastha. Right, his family's dead. He's not running things. Duryodhana was running the things, and he's not the king anymore. But he's living in the palace, and he's still, you know, managing Hastinapur. He doesn't manage the empire, but just Hastinapur. And so then from there it just goes down. Then he goes to the forest. So it has the widest range. So it's not, these aspects aren't understood. If these are understood, then it would be much more appreciated, one, the engagement of the senses in grihastha life, and the winding down of that engagement, and then whatever position is required for that. Someone needs more, someone needs less. So it doesn't matter. You know, if someone has too little, we'll say, why don't you have more? And if they have too much, why do you have too much? Because we're too used to this concept, just the equality, everyone's the same. You know, at the same time as we complain about just being a face in the crowd and everyone's the same, but at the same time we want to fit in and just be this. Really, there's no philosophy here, right? Because philosophy starts at manomoi, but this kind of approach is pranamoi. So they talk philosophy, but that's really why we say so-called, because it's not even philosophical. But you understand you're a Brahmin, you have duties, therefore things have to be connected, so how does the Brahmin apply? That's philosophy. That you have to analyze and see it according to bigger principles. But just, I feel this, I feel that, and then I work out some, you know, little formulas to make it sound good, that's not actually philosophy. Yeah. Does that make sense? So if that's understood, then those who want to live more simple, that would be respected in the Grihastha community. And those who, if for them it's not a problem, could live more things, that wouldn't be disturbed a problem either. The main thing is not whether they have more or less, what's the attitude? Are they humble? Are they tolerant? Are these things there? They have that devotional attitude like Ambarish. But instead we worry, no, everybody should be the same and not worry about the attitude. So we can be very puffed up, very envious, very nasty, all these different things. As long as we can talk the talk and, you know, like that, then we're accepted. Okay, this is standard. Is that? Yeah, so it has to switch. We put the emphasis on the skills when it actually has to be the attitude. So Grihastha is an attitude. Vanaprastha is an attitude. Brahmachari, sannyasi, they're attitudes. So ideally, one develops the mood of sannyas where you're performing activities in Naishkarmya simply to please Krishna right from the beginning, like Prahlad Maharaj. You know, but Prahlad Maharaj went from Brahmachari then into Grihastha and then Vanaprastha, you know, like this. So, but he was a sannyasi all along and by his mentality. So that's ideal, but if not, at least by the time you get there and you get to sannyas, at least at that time you should be trying to develop that mentality. If not, already in Vanaprastha. Right? Because that's the point, is that since we look at the secondary, then the secondary is adjusted so that there's a concept of a rite of passage so that there's a change in mentality. Right? Because if we change the external, it's easier to change the mentality to go with it. But if we don't change the external, then many times we won't adjust the mentality. Does that make sense? So the Veda adjust for both of those. It has the external changes, but its actual emphasis and focus is all on the internal change. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Is that further? Yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, anyone who chants this narration or even thinks of this narration about the activities of Maharaj Ambarish certainly becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. By the grace of the Lord, those who hear about the activities of Maharaj Ambarish, the great devotee, certainly become liberated or become devotees without delay. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 27. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur herein gives a very good example. When one is very eager for more and more money, he is not satisfied, even when he is a millionaire or a multimillionaire, but wants to earn more and more money by any means. The same mentality is present in a devotee. The devotee is never satisfied, thinking, this is the limit of my devotional service. The more he engages in the service of the Lord, the more service he wants to give. Maharaj Ambarish, in his family life, was certainly a pure devotee, complete in every respect, because his mind and all his senses were engaged in devotional service. Savai mana, Krishna padara vindayor, vachamsi vaikunta gunan varnane. Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.18. Maharaj Ambarish was self-satisfied because all of his senses were engaged in devotional service. Sarvupadi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam. Rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila 19.170. Nonetheless, he left his home and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully at the lotus feet of Krishna. exactly as a mercantile man, even though complete in wealth, tries to earn more and more. This mentality of getting more and more engaged in devotional service puts one in the most exalted position. Whereas on the karma platform, the mercantile man who wants more and more money becomes increasingly bound and entangled. The devotee becomes increasingly liberated. It's interesting because this is the end of the chapter, but this is the second or third time that the end of the chapter probably ended with a purport making this point. You know, about how the devotee wants to, is always trying for more. So that's the idea, that's what vanaprastha is for, is that we're engaged in devotional service and family life, and that's nice, but we want more of that devotion, therefore the vanaprastha is the natural position, because then the more direct activities are there. Is that sense? Yes.
When Krishna gives some crises and hardships to the devotee, it's the way that Krishna creates the limitation that he had before.
Okay, yes, yes.
Because the devotee faces something that he never faced before, and then he's having something that he never done before.
Yes, that's there. That will be that'll be the aspect of Krishna attracting the devotee into devotional service, either by it's something nice and so you're attracted, or material becomes less attractive, so then you, as an alternative, turn to Krishna. So that's his mercy upon the devotee. That we were getting in that was the whole point in that whole pastime with Bali Maharaj, like that. This one is that principle, but this is the devotee himself is trying to engage himself more and more. So he'll be giving up the material position so that he can take up the devotional service more. Right? So you reduce on the material endeavor so there's more opportunity for Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense?
In
the
light of Bhagavatam, Prabhupada also makes the statement that vanaprastha allows you to take rest from materialistic activities and take up spiritual. But modern politicians are not intelligent, that's why they don't take rest. They won't take rest,
yes. Yeah, that's the idea, is that the opportunity now that one can means one's taken responsibility, as we were saying, to renounce family responsibilities. Because that's the actual thing. That's the hard thing to give up. We're thinking, no, to give up the money, the responsibility is the hard one to give up. Because whether you have more money or less money, that's not the point. Is have you given up the responsibility of family life? So the point is here, in this case, then the children, they're grown up now, and so they can manage the family life. Whatever the estate was, they can manage it. Right? So that's the difficulty thing. So one may be retired to some degree, but then has the attachment been given up? There's one thing is that one is there, and so when they have difficulties, then something is said. You know, they come, they ask, or you point out something. But then you have the aspect where it seemingly they're renounced, but, you know, the shop is there, everything's going on, the son's running the shop over in the corner, then, you know, the father is there, you know, with his Gita, you know, on the little stand, he's got his japa and his pictures and other books like that. But he's got one eye on the Gita and one eye on what's going on. So he hasn't actually renounced the responsibility. Means he, you know, of course, wants to see that the son knows better and how to move forward with it, but he hasn't given up the responsibility. That's the essential point in vanaprastha, is giving up, renouncing the family responsibility, not renouncing the facility. You understand? Means now it's the son's facility, one has something and one like this, but it's whatever's comfortable for you at the time. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, I think it's not an uncommon thing that, you know, quite wealthy people, they have big houses, and in the house they have what's called a granny flat or a granny apartment. You know this? Never heard of it. It is like a small apartment that's complete in itself within the bigger house. It's used for guests, it's used for when, you know, relatives come, you know, your mother and things, that they stay there. Like that. But then also the idea is they stay there, you might mothers, but when you retire, you'll shift there and your kids will take the house. They'll manage everything and the lawns and that. You'll just take care of yourself. so and so. But the point is that giving up the responsibility, that's the hard part. You know, that the kids actually grow up. Because for the parents, the kids are always small. But they're big now. You know? You know, they can run things. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
You see, in Mahabharata, Arjuna and Dhritarashtra, they had that difficulty. They couldn't give up those responsibilities. And they were forced, one by Krishna, one by Vidura. But they tried to take it as much as possible.
Yes. So that's why those examples are there, because that's what we do. Because we just gave the person just there, the sons gets married and that, and is able to take all the things in the house, and then just walks out. Then we say, oh, I can't do that. But when we show these ones, it's okay, they go through, then we can relate, and then... But yes, it is, because we're used to it.
I guess another difficulty with the modern day devotees is that many don't have, you know, children at all. Some are untrained, some are not devotees,
Yes. But then that's the point, is then in one sense, technically it should be easier to give up family responsibilities because there isn't one. Yeah, because in other words, then husband and wife just figure out, okay, do we need all this? You know, they have the big place, you know, guests and relatives and programs and this and that. So do they really require to keep that? And if yes, they'll do more programs, more different things like that. And so that, and they can take care of it, then nice. But if they find it's just difficult, it's that it takes time out of when they'd rather be hearing and chanting and doing, you know, other things like that, then they'll do something else. They'll reduce on that because, you know, like you said, there's no family to give it to. So, yeah, in any case, it has its... One, it's easier, and at the same time, it's not.
Yeah, I was thinking that the not easy part is that you build it up, the whole empire.
And you don't hand it over to somebody. Yeah, but then that also just shows that how the temporariness of the material world. You know, it has some satisfaction that you build it up and then hand it over to the next generation and they don't blow it. You know, I'm saying. Yeah, don't get themselves killed driving their Ferrari and pressing friends. Mm-hmm. Like that, yeah. Yes.
At the end of the world, it's all about saving yourself.
Yes. It's eventually all about saving yourself, because if you don't save yourself, what's the point of the whole endeavor? Because the process is self-realization. So you understand who you are, so therefore you can surrender to Krishna.
And you see that the modern lifestyle now, especially in the West and in the UK, for example, historically, every 2-3 years they push up the retirement age. Mm-hmm. And when they can actually calculate, you are able to retire and live or enjoy yourself. You know, so now for men it's like 70 or something.
Oh, it's up to 70 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was a kid it was 65. Then it went up to 67.
Ladies, it's a little less, but...
Well, that's the whole point, is they're saying about people live longer. So then that's the whole problem, is your, what do you call it? It starts with a P, those funds?
Pension,
but there's also some other name for it.
The Providential Fund?
Yeah, Providential. Yeah, like that, is that the funds are put there. But the problem is if you live longer, then they have to spend more. So if they push up the age, at least you're making money. You know, then, you know. So all they're trying to do is, okay, you're on the pension fund for, let's say, 5 years or 10 years. But if you're going to be on for 20 years, that's a problem. So then you push up the age and then, you know, 2 more years that you work. And so they get more, you know. And probably the statistics are that yes, people will only live up to here. So, you know, a few people live to 20, but most people will retire and die in 2 years. So it's just business, that's all.
Actually, the externals don't even
support. Yeah, so there's this idea that, yes, I'll be, what do you call it? But that's why the Vedic system is, you've already set yourself up on your own without these kind of things. In other words, where you live within your means, and then you retire and take up vanaprastha life. But here we're dependent upon others, so then that becomes more of a difficulty.
Amrish Maharaj is an emperor.
A little louder. Amrish Maharaj is an emperor.
Okay. And he's very a unique example because he's executing all the nine processes like Shravanam Kirtanam.
Yes.
And according to Bhagavad Gita, like Yadyat Acharti Shrishtas, like whatever the leader does, you know, the common men follow.
Right.
So because he's an emperor, he must be having many kings under him.
Right.
To manage the entire affairs. So is it that, you know, they also were devotees and because they cooperated with him, he was able to do so well in his bhakti. Because we see in a temple, that temple president, he's able to do well because his managers and
this
all
is fun.
Are cooperating with him and they are also...
The whole point is they're cooperating, that's their glory that they do, but why is it that they know how to cooperate and that you have the structure in which they can cooperate? Right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make sense. Did it make sense?
Yes.
Okay. See. Everything has its place. And the point is those kings wouldn't be able to prosper and do so well without the emperor. So that their position that they're in, and they are prosperous, and therefore have the opportunity to there cooperate then with the emperor, that's because of the emperor. They don't make the emperor makes them. Right? Otherwise, they're just a king that has to worry about their circle of influence. And then constantly be fighting with everybody. But because it's an emperor, it's considered like one kingdom. So where is the circle of influence? Not the next one over and the one after that. It's outside the kingdom. You understand? So we have to understand that, yes, they personally get that glory for that they're cooperating, but that's their duty. It's not that they make the emperor. Say the temple president's there, he has that. Yes, but those are called ornaments, just like, what do you call it? Ujjain, the throne, so many steps, all the figurines talk, Vikramaditya. Right? And so he had nine ministers, right? Known as the Navaratna, right? But the point is Navaratna is glorifying who?
The king.
The king. So without him, it's not that in any kingdom they don't have nine such people. It's just that kingdom doesn't know how to organize it, that those nine people are inspired to come forward and take part in that process. Mm-hmm. So in other words, it's always the point of authority is what goes. Otherwise, then that's what you get. Okay, this big guy, he has this factory with 10,000 laborers, and he's making so much money. But if we, the laborers, didn't come and work in his factory, he would have nothing. So therefore, the whole thing is about us. We should be getting more of the money. He should be getting less. In fact, he should be on the salary, and we should split up the profits. You understand? So this mentality is, you know, that's why the Vedas has, it's an authority-based system. This whole point of equality is based on the platform of the soul. But if we try to make conditioning equal, then we will always fail. Always. You know? Like that. Because people will say, no, but this is the way it's going, this is the progress, this is the everything. But in one sense, you have as much, if not more, of the exact opposite, more reactionary right in the world that's obvious. Before in the Cold War, it's, you know, a little subtle. But now it's like very obvious. And so this whole idea that this is working and this is moving forward and progressing is just talk. There is no progress. You can't progress when there's no concept of authority. And why do these other systems, why are they gaining momentum and all that? Not necessarily we're saying that they're good. We're just saying they accept authority. Right? That's why did Bali Maharaj and the demons, they were able to take over the demigods. They shouldn't be, but what was the point? They accepted authority. While Bali Maharaj and them, while Indra and them, they're kind of like not neglecting authority. So in the same way, as we get into this modern kind of thinking, and we neglect authority, because everybody, it's all about everybody, and it's just like that. And so then the real process that makes things go forward is neglected. And so those who do follow it, even though they may follow it for nefarious reasons, it works. So one has to understand that that's how it should be looked at. Now, for the person who is on the top, he will be thankful that, yes, these people are cooperating nicely and they're doing their duties, and so he is indebted to them and all that, but that's his mentality. But if they think he should be indebted to us, then they're sinful. One has to know who thinks what. Right? You know, it was just like before, we had the things of the husband and wife, and it comes up the part about the ladies, and then immediately it's means those who aren't well trained, and all, yeah, why aren't the ladies like that? And the guys that are more trained, and they're all quiet, you know, they don't bring up anything, right? Because the point is yes, that's the duties of women, but unless the men create the environment in which they're inspired to do their duties, then how that'll happen? You can't say women follow men and then say they have to do it on their own. You can't do that. That's not intelligent. If women are dependent, that means they're dependent on the man creating the environment in which they're inspired to do their duties. So then the man, he focuses simply on performing his duties. And how does he know he's doing his duties? By the symptom that the lady is doing hers. So that's what it has to do. So Ambarish, he may look at it that way, but if the kings under him look at it that way, then they're nonsense. So we have to remember that. Otherwise, you turn it upside down, and that's where you get politics, because everybody thinks I can do that. That's how you got the French Revolution was like that. Any of the they're all like that. Is that somebody comes up to get a little money instead of having to worry about next day bread. So now they have, two loaves of bread, so now they become puffed up. So then the whole point is, he's doing it, we could do that. And so, but the point is, yes, maybe you could do that. Fine. But the point is there has to be one person there that's making the decision. So if you want to be the one, you do it. But then everybody else, if they're all thinking, no, but I could do it, you have nothing. Nothing will run. Right. You ever try to get, what was it? Was it 230 or 200, 2,200 people to unanimously agree on something, and then only it could be policy? Yeah, I'm saying that therefore the empire collapsed.
Then what more do you want
to do? Well, I don't know why you'd want to do it, because it didn't work in Russia, so...
Maybe he doesn't know.
Maybe. you understand? So the whole point is that there has to be a hierarchy. And so Prabhupada, if somebody was complaining about the temple president and he wasn't qualified and this and that, Prabhupada would say, okay, you do it and make him the temple president. Because this whole thing where people who are below just creating agitation, what service is that? How is that for Krishna? How is that in line with something progressive? It's not. So he'd make him the president, and then take that president and put him into a bigger temple, or a new project, or something like that, because he's proven himself. And then when the others come up and they're biting at the bit, the young horses like that, then they, okay, you do it. And then they'll move them on to, okay, I want to, start a new thing over here, and then send them there. So one has to be very clear that the department head is doing that, but can the department head do more than that? Because you have to know in the corporate world the Peter principle. No? You don't know the Peter principle. Okay. You never heard of the Peter principle? There's a saying in English that something peters out. Means it goes up to it goes to a point and then it runs out. Like your money peters out. You go on vacation, you have so much money, and then spending it peters out. Right? So the Peter principle is that someone's at their level that they're good at, and then if you put them up higher than that, they can't do anything. So the point is could any of those kings be the emperor? And if they can't, they can only be kings. So there's no use of saying that they make the emperor. Does that make sense? So it's very important, this aspect. Otherwise, the authority structure falls apart. Okay. Should be everybody's qualified. If the top's not qualified, yes, that's a point of check. But the point is not that. It's about these agitation and all that, and you know, all that kind of stuff. It's about, no, qualified people should take up posts that need qualification. Yeah. You have something? No.
Okay. I heard that here in the verse mentions that he divided his kingdom among the sons.
Yes.
But I heard that is like not really Vedic. Vedic is the senior son became a head, and others just serve.
So then you're saying Bhagavatam's not Vedic?
No, yes, I just want to clear what...
Means you have both systems. You have either the eldest son takes the whole estate, and then the other sons, then they just assist in that, and they work together. In other words, as the sons are assisting the father, the other brothers assist the older brother. In other words, the older brother takes the position of the father, both in the way of responsibility and managing it, but also responsibility as far as family goes. Just like the father takes care of the sons, the elder brother will take care of the younger brothers. That's one way of doing it. The other is you divide it, and each son gets a certain amount. Right? But then if that's there, then it's also the eldest son, he gets that bit more, because he's the one that's going to do the Shraddha rites. Right? You know, there's ten brothers, the eldest brother, he gets that extra share because he's going to do the Shraddha rites. But if he's not going to do the Shraddha rites, whoever does, they get the extra share. Is it promulgenitor or something? Primogenitor or something like that is the word for it. That extra share. Does that make sense? So that's another way to do it. So both are there. So here, they each, because they're kings, then they see as kings, they generally run their own kingdom. So that way, then he divides it up. So you see all these great personalities in these lines of Manu and things and that. One, he runs the whole Bhumandala, and he has seven sons. Or no, it was something more, because one of them didn't take up anything. Then he gives one island to each. So it's a standard way of doing things. Because they're kings, so kings generally run their own thing. It's not that the older brother isn't more prominent, not that he may not be the emperor. You know, he may still be the emperor, but they have their own kingdom. Instead of that the king's outside, and then he's running them, he had one kingdom, he divided that up, the sons, and now that's headed by the one son. So still the same principle can be running. But as Kshatriyas, they have their own. Like the Pandavas, they wanted five villages. Why didn't they just ask for one village? Because they're Kshatriyas, so each runs their own village. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaja Yati enthroned Puru, the youngest son, because
yes.
He gave his
seat to him. Yes. Yes. It's just whoever has the qualification. So Puru showed the qualification.
But Maharaj Ambarish also. He was not the first one, there were so many. And he was enthroned.
Emperor.
Yeah, Maharaj Ambarish was the emperor.
I asked the question before. It's because of the influence or because of...
Must be. Because the point is that you have to be able to do it. Because to be emperor, it's not that just, you know, you can play a fiddle and therefore you become emperor. You know, you like fires and you play fiddle and so, hey, you're an emperor, you know, like that. That means empires go down because of that. You know, does that make sense? You know, what is it? Augustus, he wasn't even Caesar's son. I think he was like a nephew or something. Hmm? Nephew, yeah. And so then he took over because he had the ability. Right, you had all these senior men in the Senate, and they would think that they would come up, but they didn't. So the whole point, if they had gone, you know, what he was trying to do to make something more balanced instead of just centered, because they had position, but they didn't actually have the influence. Right, because otherwise, why didn't they politic him out? But what's his name? He politicked them out, Augustus, and killed them. So, you know, he did both. You know, he got everybody, even Mark Antony. He went all the way to Egypt to get him. You know, so that's the whole, he was qualified. Like that. And then after a while, it's just, they just inherited it, but they weren't qualified. So then the empire was lost. But while qualification was there in the East, that went for another 1,000 years. So that's the whole point, is that who's qualified, they get that position, not otherwise. Otherwise, why is Vidura the prime minister? Like that, because he's qualified. So you have to see that. That's coming, that was in with Dhruva Maharaj. That his father, how he decided on who would sit on the throne, is that he had an idea. He felt Dhruva was qualified. He asked the ministers, who are the seniors, the Brahmins, what they think. They said, yes, they agree he's qualified. Then he also checks through his spies and all that, what the people think. It's not by vote. He gets their understanding by, you know, through the spies, and they go out, you know, all the places where people congregate, and then this, and the, you know, they have to talk, right? Sports and politics anyway, so that's all they talk about. So then they'll find out that they also appreciate, and so then when all three is there, then he's made the king. That's the method. You don't make someone king who's not. So we even see is then when, was it Jarasandha? You know, they killed Jarasandha, but then they made his son the king. But it was also that the others were agreeable. You know, so that's always the point, is you make someone. The modern thing is, no, you make your own man, even though everybody hates him. No, you have to make someone who is, that the people like, and that the ministers like. Because they're the ones who have to, the ministers have to work with him, and the people have to be managed by him. So they're all the ones that are to be considered. And the king, because he's had that responsibility, he should be comfortable. Right? So it's all that. So it's not just he does it. It's not just, like you say, monarchical. It's not just oligarchical, and it's not democratic. You have to use all of them together. So here it doesn't get into the detail, it's already been explained. So it just says he made this one the, like there, Vanaprastha, we know. You can go with the wife, without the wife. It didn't mention if you went with his wife or not. Like that, because it's already been discussed before. So unless it's something that needs to be reiterated, it won't be said. Okay. Conclusion. Even a very intelligent man cannot understand the activities of a pure Vaishnava, because there's always a possibility to be mistaken when studying the character of a Vaishnava. But Durvasa Muni was a great yogi and a very learned brahmana. Maharaj Ambarish belonged to the Kshatriya group. And therefore Durvasa Muni considered him lower than the brahmanas, and wanted to exercise brahminical power against him. By this incident, everyone should learn how to stop mischievous ideas of neglecting Vaishnavas. Chapter summary. When Durvasa Muni was persecuted by the Sudarshan Chakra, his intelligence developed. He's developing very fast. Therefore, by his personal experience, he understood how great a Vaishnava the king was. Durvasa Muni was certainly a great yogi and a very learned brahmana, but despite his being a great yogi, he was unable to understand the influence of a Vaishnava. Therefore, it is said, Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra Vigyeha Na Bhujai. Even the most learned person cannot understand the value of a Vaishnava. There is always a possibility for so-called jnanis and yogis to be mistaken when studying the character of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava can be understood by how much he is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of his inconceivable activities, Upanaya. Durvasa Muni was convinced of the power of Bhakti Yoga, although he himself was a great mystic yogi. Therefore, as stated by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 6:47, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenataratmana shadavan vajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendent loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. Thus, it is a fact that a devotee is the topmost yogi, as proved in the dealings of Maharaj Ambarish with Durvasa Muni. Jai. Ambarish Maharaj ki jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.